The New Year's resolution in international trade sounds like it could be get some deals done. For Marketplace in Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Euler, and for David Brancaccio. Well, it's the first day of trading in 2020, and there could be some clarity emerging in terms of trade deals and tariffs early this year. A little bit of clarity. Here to get into all that and more is Diane Swonk. She's chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Diane, good morning.
Good morning.
So this is the first trading day of the new year. Is there something sort of in the larger economy that we should be keeping our eye on?
Well, one, we need to figure out if and what the new trade deal, the phase one trade deal with China will be. We need to sort of rejoice that we do have a USMCA, although it is different than the old NAFTA. And then we have to deal with Europe and whether or not we're going to be able to get a trade deal with them. Trade has been one of those factors that has been the major negative for the U.S. economy over the last year and caused the biggest fear factor. And by hitting the pause on trade wars, if we can manage to maintain that, that at least lifts some of that doom and gloom.
You know, I'm here in Austin, Texas, and we talk about USMCA all the time. Businesses here, we're worried about just getting something done. It sounds like businesses that consumers are going to be okay with this new deal, right?
They're going to be okay, although it will raise prices. It is a more costly deal, and it's really, really important to places like Texas. Texas is one of the major choke points, and that's why the USMCA was so important there. So the good news is that we're getting a deal done. Much of it looks like the Trans-Pacific trade deal. Remember TPP, that old deal from many years ago they threw out?
Sure.
All the new parts are that. That would have gone into effect anyways. What we don't know about is the change in content and how those are going to be reinforced, because that could be a blow to costs for some U.S. producers. And the question is, will it really boost employment here in the U.S.? And that's not clear at all.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Diane, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
New rules meant to protect consumer data from hackers and breaches took effect this week in three states. Companies that collect info on you and me, anything from credit card info to even usernames and passwords, now have to notify state authorities if that data has been stolen. Marketplace's Scott Tong has more.
Over the past year, all kinds of companies have seen their vaults of consumer data compromised. These firms are in fast food and banking, autos, even online betting. More and more states are forcing companies to promptly report these breaches to legal authorities, and that now includes Texas, Illinois, and Oregon. Justin Brookman at Consumer Reports says the point is to make companies more careful.
They'll be incentivized to protect the data in the first place. They don't have to go about telling not just consumers, but also the Attorney General.
State rules and penalties also have companies thinking hard about how much personal data to keep and for how long, says attorney Caleb Skeith at Covington and Burling.
This has, I think, led to companies making sure they're not retaining data for longer than they need it, and thereby exposing themselves to additional legal and regulatory risk.
Even though states pass laws every year to protect consumer data, Skeith says there's no new significant action at the federal level. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Hello to 2020 and to all the new Marketplace investors who joined us before the end of the decade. Thank you for being part of this community of donors who believe in the importance of trustworthy, independent news and information. It's your ongoing support that keeps us going strong and helps make people smarter everywhere. Thanks again and Happy New Year.
The nation's capital often gets a bad rap as an unfashionable city where fitting into the office overrides personal style. Think J. Crew and sensible shoes over Gucci. But a number of small-scale designers and boutique owners are trying to build up the city's fashion industry. From WAMU in Washington, D.C., Michaela Lefrak reports.
When you think high fashion, you probably think Paris or New York, not D.C. But recently, I found myself at a runway show in the middle of the nation's capital, surrounded by people in towering heels, couture dresses, and bright prints.
I love my city, and when it comes to fashion, we definitely have a lot to offer.
That's model Dalia Inman. She's with a local designer named Efwa Sam, who sees D.C. fashion in two distinct stages.
Before Michelle Obama came and after, it became more fashionable.
Despite the Obama effect, office attire still has a pretty strong hold in Washington. But more stores are selling locally made apparel. Stacy Price owns a string of three boutiques called Shop Made in D.C.
We're all trying to bust the myth that we're this buttoned-up city.
All the clothes in her store are made by local designers. Price is part talent scout, part business consultant. She finds designers on Instagram or at craft shows, then helps them scale their businesses. She tells me about one earring designer she met at a street market.
She was like, oh yeah, I'm selling these for like $8. We were like, no, you're in demand. It takes you a long time to make these things. Here's your new business model.
The earrings now go for $25 in Price's shop, but there's a limit to how much small designers can scale without help, and DC doesn't have many clothing manufacturers. If Price wants to order, say, 100 dresses for the holiday rush, there are only a handful of local places that can fill the order.
Several fashion designers that use one seamstress in the city to make their items, and those people that are going outside the city are going to places like Philadelphia and New York.
But shipping the product back to D.C. from that far north cuts into profits. Some up-and-comers are looking to fill this hole in the pipeline. Lorena Ponce is studying fashion design at Marymount University in Arlington, Virginia.
Bringing fashion to D.C., that's kind of my purpose.
She's interned with that one seamstress Price mentioned. After graduating, she wants to stay here to open her own shop. In Washington, I'm Michaela Lefrak for Marketplace.
Speaking of fashion, according to a federal complaint, an international counterfeit ring shipped hundreds of millions of dollars worth of fake sneakers to the U.S. The complaint says the counterfeit Nike and Louis Vuitton footwear would be worth more than $472 million if it were real. Worldwide sales of knockoff goods exceeded $520 billion last year, representing more than 3% of all global trade. Last year, the feds busted a counterfeit ring in New York. They say smuggled almost 400,000 pairs of imitation Air Jordans into the U.S., potentially costing Nike more than $70 million in lost revenue. This morning, we're also covering the passing of former NBA Commissioner David Stern and his lasting business legacy. You can find that at our website, marketplace.org. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.